ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to That's Hindsight, a brand new podcast which puts media from the past under the microscope. We look back with hindsight and see whether films from the past hold up today. Hello, everyone, and I'm joined here by Taylor. Hello, how are Taylor? How are you?
Hi, I'm Taylor. I'm fine today.
Good.
Looking forward to getting back in past, you know.
Getting back in the past?
Yep.
Let's hashtag get back to the past.
Throwback.
Sounds like a name of an almost film.
Back to the
future. Shh, don't say it. We haven't watched it.
Who's that voice of the unidentified person over there?
It's me.
Mark Shepherd, how are you?
Very well, thank you. And yourself?
Oh, you know what? I'm okay.
Good, yeah.
It's the second episode.
It's the second episode.
I feel the first episode went quite well.
I was very pleased. Our second real episode, don't include all of our various pilots.
Yeah, it's a little peek behind the curtain there. We did record several iterations before we actually decided to release one. But no, I think it went down very well, and hopefully we'll be changing things up as we go along, and it's a living, breathing thing.
Yeah, let us know if there's anything you'd like to see us do, any features you'd like added and stuff, like things we could talk about. We'll ignore them and do what we want.
Did have some feedback.
Yes.
How would I get in touch?
Well, I'll tell you, Taylor. You would email thatshindsight@gmail.com. Or you could tweet us, of course, @thatshindsight.
Yep.
Or even Instagram DM, you know, that's Instagram pod.
That's Hindsight Pod.
Oh dear.
Oh God, I've had too much coffee
drinking
today. Woo-wee!
Or Facebook as well. Facebook message.
It's an option. So, last time we discussed 10 Things I Hate About You, which we all liked, we all enjoyed. And that was because it was from Taylor's year of birth, 1999.
Whoop whoop! Big up!
The quicker we move on from that. So this time it was my turn. And I was born in 1987. And I decided to choose Lethal Weapon, which hopefully, if you listen to the last episode, you've watched in the meantime. So you can listen along and be there for the ride with us.
Ooh. I did.
I'm glad you watched it.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me.
Well, we're going to take a break for an hour. With that in mind, let's take a journey back. To 1987.
Oh.
Mark, do you remember the year?
I was 7 years old at the time. So no, not really. No, I can't remember much. Being at lower school, but that's about it. Things were going on, I'm sure.
I didn't realise you two had a 7-year age difference. I know I knew that, but I didn't know that at the same time.
I'm quite old.
No, but I thought it was 10 years. I just automatically assumed that there was 10 years between all of us. I know that's not the fact, but...
There you go. Well, now you know.
There we go.
Now you know.
Well, 1987, I obviously don't remember much about 1987.
I remember the skies were dark in March.
And I believe there was snow in February and January. I don't know.
I'm so confused.
Yeah, we're just talking rubbish.
Don't worry. We've curated a selection of facts about the year 1987 to try and help us get in and set the surroundings a little bit. So I'll kick us off.
Okay.
So the USSR was a thing back then.
Oh, yeah.
And 19-year-old Matthias Rust landed a Cessna plane in the Red Square. So he flew from West Germany, which weren't friends with the USSR, and landed right in the Red Square outside the Kremlin.
Impressive.
That is cool. Quite cool.
What does the USSR stand for?
I also didn't understand a lot of that.
So Germany was split in two.
Yeah, I know the USSR, but I don't know. Like, they flew a plane and landed it in a square that was red.
No, red. The red square's in Moscow. Not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
What is the red
doubted
square?
Myself then for a second.
That's like the main part of Moscow.
It's outside
like,
the Kremlin?
Yeah, it's like
is
the
it
government.
Is it actually a red square?
I don't know if it is red. What's the ground?
That's
is it paved
question,
with red?
Actually, I don't know.
Is it actually a square as well?
But it's basically like, I think it's like the courtyard outside of the Kremlin.
Yeah.
And it's quite, so they had this thing called the Iron Curtain.
Yeah,
obviously, you know, I don't need to tell you, Taylor, obviously, about all of this. But so this bloke from West Germany just landed a plane right in this square.
What happened to him?
He was arrested.
Okay.
And I think was sentenced to like 4 years at a labour camp or something. But they let him go because he was only 19. They realised he wasn't a threat. And he only did about 14 months and then went home. Yeah, he's a pretty crazy guy.
Well, it's called the Red Square because it originally described a small area that was previously called a posar, I'm probably saying that wrong, which was a burnt out place, which reflected the previous buildings had burned down.
Oh.
So there you go. So I didn't know that.
History lesson for us all.
Oh, wasn't it just? Plus the Kremlin's red. Let's pretend it's that.
Yeah, it's that. That's the reason why.
Now, really in relation to this,
mm-hmm.
the very first Disney Happy Meal tie-in was released.
Oh.
What was it?
Cinderella, I think, or it was Disney. When it says tie-in, does that just mean the theme of the Happy Meal? I presume so.
Yes, they did it's a deal. Fact, they did know. A deal to have Disney branding on the.
I loved a Happy Meal toy. Rate them.
I mean, they were better back in the day. They're real cheap plastic now.
One of them's a sticker activity book for Lady and the Tramp. I'd be well chuffed with that.
Did you say sticker activity book?
Yeah.
I thought you said sick activity
sick.
Book.
Sick. No, sticker.
Sick, yo.
Right?
I'm going to go with one. So the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, became the very first woman inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, Aretha, rest in peace. Legend.
Absolute legend. I don't know how long the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has been going for, but the fact that a woman wasn't in there till 1987 seems mad.
It does, doesn't it? Margaret Thatcher, speaking of powerful women, was elected as the UK Prime Minister for the third time.
She was there a while.
Mm.
I remember her.
Long old stint.
Been a downhill slide ever since.
Baby Jessica was rescued after being trapped in a well for 2.5 days. Do you remember this?
No. I was
not. I heard it was a massive, massive thing. Like
it was American, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I heard that across the world, everyone was invested in Baby Jessica. Like the phone lines were just ringing constantly.
In the well for 2 days?
Yeah. So she was staying with her auntie, who was a babysitter. I only know this brief, like roughly, so if I get it wrong, don't judge me. And she fell down the well, and it took... But they couldn't just lower... I don't know why, but I think she'd gone down a side bit. So they actually had to dig a separate hole to get her out without affecting the structural integrity. And like, she was thought to have broken bones. And it was like, it was really like really high pressure. And the world was just bought into rescuing this baby. And they did.
Sounds horrific.
There was a man, I don't really know who he was, but he stayed there for the full 2 days and just sang like songs. And wow. You could hear this little girl singing back. And they were singing like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And
it's an often referenced thing in sitcoms and stuff, people falling in wells and it being like Baby Jessica, but I've never really known what it's from. So there you go. Now I know when it was from, at least. Red Bull made its debut in Austria.
It's that old?
Yeah, I didn't know it was that old either. I was quite surprised by that. So, and I didn't know it was Austrian either.
No, I don't think I did either.
Just wouldn't have thought it would be Austrian.
I'm getting blown away.
Yeah.
All over.
The adverts are...
With mountains and everything.
Oh, you obviously pay more attention to the adverts, I don't know.
Just drawn.
All I can think about is they give you wings at the minute.
Red Bull gives you wings.
They haven't done adverts in ages for Red Bull. I haven't seen one. So they don't need to anymore, really.
Probably don't. Well, they
do, but
too busy owning Formula One teams and football clubs.
Yeah.
The highest grossing film of 1987 was Three Men and a Baby. That's crazy.
It's a good film.
Yeah, it is good. Worth watching.
So, cell phones. First of all, calling it cell phone, very American.
Love it.
Look like bricks and cost about 50 cents a minute to use, not including the monthly $100 to $150 service fee. Did you know anyone with a cell phone?
Not in 1987, no.
My dad.
Did he?
Yeah, he had a chunky, what, like car battery style. Well, you actually see one in Lethal Weapon.
Yeah,
we'll
yeah.
get to that later. But yeah, he had one of those huge, thick car phone things. It's amazing.
I still find it mental that you guys grew up without phones. Like, obviously I did to a certain extent, but I had a phone.
We survived, mostly.
But like, you have proper, like, technology has come from, like, jump in the last...
We've grown up with it while it's been evolving, which has been fun.
An interesting perspective.
I'll give you one more fact. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles made its TV debut along with DuckTales. And Interestingly, DuckTales has been revived in the last couple of years. But it's got probably one of the most memorable theme tunes, I think, out of a lot of cartoons.
Can you sing it?
I could sing it, but I'm not going to.
Please.
Copyright.
Come on.
Darn that copyright. The best-selling album in the US, I should stress, was Bon Jovi, Slippery When Wet. I thought it'd be Michael Jackson Bad, but no, it wasn't. So can we have one more fact?
Oh, The Simpsons made its debut on a TV show. I actually didn't write it down properly because you both...
Tracy Ullman Show.
Tracy Ullman. Mental that it didn't just... Like, 33 years on, they're still...
Still making it.
Still plugging away.
If you look at the drawings on that original TV show, they look weird.
They do look weird.
Yeah.
Yes, drawings of yellow people who have arrows for hair look weird. Shock.
So hopefully with all of this, we have set the scene for 1987. So we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back to discuss Lethal Weapon.
Oh.
And welcome back. So, Lethal Weapon. Tell me, Mark, what is your history with Lethal Weapon?
I never watched it for a long time when I was... like, I obviously didn't see it when it came out because it was an 18 and I was 7. But as I've mentioned many times now, I realise. I can't honestly remember the first time I saw it. But it was one of those films that I think I saw one of the sequels before I saw the original. And then obviously saw that and I was just like, actually, these are awesome. Let's go and watch them. I think I saw the second one first because I always thought that was the first one.
I feel like they were on TV a lot when, like in the
90s. Yeah,
they're
very much a movies at Christmas sort of thing back
in the day. I think my experience is much the same.
I've never seen it at all. Shock.
Had you heard of it?
Probably. I didn't know what it was going to be about.
Okay.
So I might have heard the name Lethal Weapon, but I didn't know anything about the plot. I did try and watch the trailer beforehand, and I thought, I need to not... Because if this puts me off, I'm really not going to look forward to watching it.
Totally.
So I watched like a minute of the trailer and then...
Got put off.
Smart.
I was like, I'm going to stop because right now this doesn't appeal to me.
Okay, so the film starts with a lovely helicopter shot over LA.
Yeah.
Lovely night. And it's like classic 80s kind of footage with a beautiful saxophone.
Oh.
Playing over the top of it. Michael Kamen composing. And then Eric Clapton on guitar as well. Such a legend.
I had no idea
you
it was
guys
that.
Listen to that. You pay attention so early. Like, this is mental.
It starts. It's so good.
I mean, it's great music. Because I mean, it's a Christmas song.
It's Jingle Bell Rock.
Oh, it's Jingle Bell Rock,
yeah.
I thought you were talking about a song before that. Because I just remember.
Jingle Bell Rock is the actual start, and then it goes in saxophone a bit later. So you get this helicopter shot that comes in and goes all the way up to this hotel room at the top of this building. Yeah. We meet the...
I was going to say it's a problem because it's a good 2 minutes of credits before the film gets going.
Yeah, it's a great continuous shot.
It is, but I remember thinking...
Do appreciate that. I did not watch
I was watching it thinking you would not get this now. That's people's attention span would not be two minutes worth of credits.
It's like that throughout the film, though, I thought. There are a lot of moments where they filmed... Jumping forward a little bit. There's a moment with this dog, the dog running along the beach. And it's such a long shot.
It's good. It lets moments land.
But I didn't... I was like... I'm definitely a millennial.
They like to
like
set
looking
the tone.
At my phone like, oh, what's... Why is this... Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Didn't realise at all that this was a Christmas film.
I'd forgotten.
Is it a Christmas... You would define this as a Christmas film?
100%. This is a Christmas movie.
I don't know if I would class it as a Christmas film. It is more a film that happens at Christmas. Whereas Die Hard is a Christmas film.
Okay.
I've not seen Die Hard, so I wasn't sure. I thought it had Hard vibes, but...
There's a lot of crossover between the two, Die Hard and Lethal Weapon, which is facts we may touch upon at some point.
It did make me happy, though, that it is September currently, and we're watching a Christmas film. I'm ready for it.
It was the right time.
It's good. It's a good time to start. Sorry, so carry on.
Yeah, so we meet the Hudsucker daughter. I can't remember her name now. Amanda Hudsucker. This is like, for me, stereotypical 80s, topless, lingerie, cocaine.
Yeah, definitely.
start to a film. It's a very strange, you're kind of with her for a minute or so. She's kind of floating around and you wonder what's going on in her head. And then she just gets up on a ledge and falls and decides to jump off.
Yeah.
With this incredible fall and like a very graceful landing on this car as well.
Well, I like, you see, I thought, I like that we're immediately into the story. Like, here's the device that's going to drive the plot of this film. Like, it's going to start, rather than meet the characters first and, you know, and then we find out what's going on. We're straight into the, this has happened, bang. I just, I like that that's, you don't see that as much nowadays. It's very much the other way round, I thought. But the fact I found out afterwards was that she performed that stunt herself.
Yeah.
And I thought that was incredible. And the fact that when she's falling, as you see her fall, the below is actually not a real shot. It's, was it an artist, a drawing or something, a painting?
Yeah, so they use one of those inflatable cushions.
Like the one they use when the guy jumps off
exactly,
the
exactly, yeah. But they painted it to match what it would have been
weird.
On the street, which is why they can kind of stay on the shot for so long as she's falling down, basically up until she hits it. But it works really
well. I
had
no idea. I just assumed it was some, like, pasted over the top somehow or something.
Or is a mannequin or something.
I want to go back and watch it again and see if I actually can tell that it's a drawing now, because it looked really good to me.
I hated the start of this film. I hated the first 25 minutes of this film.
Wow.
I'm going to put it out there.
Why didn't you like, this very first bit then?
So the first 8 minutes of the film, not a single main character is wearing a top, male or female.
Oh, wow.
What sort of a film? Because obviously she's topless in the first scene and I just put boobies, cocaine, downhill. I was like, I'm not interested. Then we go to Martin Riggs. And again, he's not wearing a top. And then we go
Naked, isn't he?
He's completely naked
Gets a nice Mel Gibson butt.
Well, it's Murtaugh first, isn't it? Murtaugh?
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
But he's in the bath.
He's in the bath.
So his family are obviously clothed.
I must admit, all the years I've watched this film over and over, I've never figured out the fact that they're all just naked.
How much nudity, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, why? I was literally like, what am I watching? Not impressed.
That's really interesting. Yeah, that never twigged me
before. Well, I suppose for Roger and Martin, I guess it's because it's the start of their day. And that's how their day starts, so they're fresh out of bed. Roger's in the bath. And I really love that scene of them all coming in and singing happy birthday to him while he's in the bath.
Kisses on the face. No.
It's the contrast of the two, isn't it, as well? Yeah, it's a family man, it's his birthday. He's obviously real, like, really a tight family.
Yeah.
And then we see Riggs.
Sleeping naked, he's not got pyjamas.
He just looks like a mess.
Yeah.
You know, he's clearly single.
The contrast, but
a hut on the beach.
I can appreciate that viewpoint, though.
Totally. Well, like I said, I genuinely had never thought about that before. That surprised me, now I'm thinking about it. I mean, it's always a bit funny when he stands up and he's fully naked and watches his little bum wobble across the air.
Yeah, but was that common for films of years?
I don't know. From the 80s, they used to like throwing in the odd boobs now and again. Like, this, and again, this is, I mentioned Die Hard again, but there's, like, very early on in that film, there's a couple having sex in one of the rooms and she's topless as she's running away. That's the only time there's anything like that in that film, but it is a bit like, let's just throw some boobs in there.
Yeah, I
think once with the filmmaker, and I don't know, this is completely my made up, but I figure, like, if you're getting that 18 rate or R rating in America, you're a bit like, oh, just chuck some boobs in.
Throw some boobs in, yeah.
Yeah, but
it's a valid, it's a good point.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
Yeah. When we move on to, so this is, I've been excited to raise this point. I've been trying not to say it already. So he drives over to where the woman has jumped, doesn't he? Drives over, he's a detective.
Yeah.
You get that impression. And on the radio, when he's there, they're describing the situation of what happened. And they say, so we've got a 350-pound white female. That would make her 25 stone.
Is that what they say, really?
They definitely say,
pound.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We did the conversion and, 25 stone. Why? Because she definitely is not 25 stone.
No.
I'd be surprised if she was over 9 stone.
Yeah.
She's a
petite woman.
Why?
I again, another thing I hadn't even heard before.
I was trying to pick up because obviously I haven't seen it before, like what the background is. Mental.
When you've watched a film as many times as perhaps I have, and I'm sure Ed's the same, a lot of those things you just probably blows past you because you're almost watching what's coming rather than watching what's actually happening. So that's another very interesting point that I'd never noticed before. See, so what had happened before that is he's gone down to breakfast, isn't he? And he's talking to his wife in the kitchen. She's a bad cook and all that. And she's telling him there's been a phone call from someone he used to see a long time ago. Then when he drives over to this accident is when he finds out that it's the guy who's called his daughter that's jumped.
That's
when you start putting that into place, which is... It's done well, because it's almost a throwaway comment in the house, and you're like, yeah, that's the same guy, the same name.
I like the way when he calls his wife to get the number, there's a lovely shot of him on the bed and looking at this picture, and it's a great shot. He describes it as like, his daughter just went out jumped out the window or something. Like, doesn't give the context of, it was on the top floor of a building or... And like, okay, is she okay?
Yeah.
And then she tells him the number and he goes, I got it. And didn't write it down.
But I think he plays it like he's very distracted by what's happened very well. So it comes across as sort of, he's obviously cut up about it because he knew this girl.
Mm.
Or he knew... Well, I'm never really entirely sure if he actually knew her or it's just because he knew her father.
But he's got a daughter of similar age.
That's it, sorry.
How
that
old
is more
daughter?
Of it, isn't it?
Just, this is a question. How old do you think she is? Because we're introduced to the daughter back at the house where she walks down the stairs and goes, this is my New Year's Eve dress, Daddy. And it's like a black dress. And you can tell he's like not comfortable with his daughter's growing up.
Yeah, yeah.
He wants to protect that innocence.
I think she's leaving high school, maybe university going.
See, I always thought she was a bit younger than that. I thought she was supposed to be 16-ish.
Or that, yep.
I mean, an older teenager.
Yeah.
Perhaps older than her years.
Oddly, the actress is only 15 years younger than Danny Glover, the father.
Is she really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's mental. Mm.
That's I did not know she was that young. And it's because this whole start of this film is very much back and forward, isn't it? Because it's Riggs on his coke deal. This is all to show how he's crazy, really, isn't it?
Mm.
Like,
I hated it.
He's very unhinged. You didn't like the coke deal either?
No.
See, that's a funny
I like
bit,
the
though.
Christmas tree is the high point. But no, it's
I love when, because you can see it a mile away how it's playing out, and he's just like, "Oh, I'll take the whole lot," and he goes, "How much? 100." And he starts counting out $100, and you can just see the faces change. No, 100,000, and he just and then the way he switches and he goes, "Well, I'm gonna take it all for free," and then I'm a cop, and this shootout explodes and. Like, obviously he had backup waiting for him, but I don't know the thought process of how he thought he was going to get... I guess he didn't think they would start shooting at him, because they say it's a fake badge, don't they?
Yeah.
But he does some of the coke. Can you do that as a cop?
You always find they used to do that, taste a bit of it back in the day, and like, rub it in their gums and stuff. You would never do it now, but that's very much a film thing, I think.
Mm. Yeah, but then... I don't know, it was just the whole...
He does the classic roll and shoot during this scene as well. I am a big fan of the roll and shoot
The guns in this film,
go on.
Too many shots all the time.
It's called Lethal Weapon.
Oh, I know, but like in this moment, it's like, I suppose it's because it wouldn't happen in the UK, but suddenly everyone's got guns and there are shots going off. Like someone pops out of the van with a shotgun and suddenly someone's got like 15 bullet holes in them.
But they're bad guys. Like, bad guys have guns.
No, but...
It is a theme throughout this film that henchmen will appear with guns.
At all times.
At any moment. Yeah. Like out the van and then later in the club, just someone comes out of the kitchen with a gun. And
But that was action films of the 80s,
oh, yeah.
It? It's the 90s, like, I remember these days.
That these people are just there waiting.
Yeah. But
you're
a villain,
you have a lot of backup, don't you?
Absolutely.
It gets a lot more intense, doesn't it, when he's like, shoot me, I just thought that was a tactic. Do you know what I mean? Not until the next scene that you actually realise he wanted to die.
I think Riggs is using it as a tactic.
Yeah.
It's just from the outside, you're like, that was insane. Like,
yeah. But he does want to die.
He does not have a disregard.
What he actually says later on is that he's not afraid to die. But, you see... What happens after that scene? He goes to commit suicide, doesn't he? He puts the gun in his mouth. He's got it all ready to go, but he can't do it. While he's not afraid to die, he can't actually kill himself.
Yeah.
No, he wants to kill himself because his wife of 11 years was killed in a car accident.
Yeah, he wants to be with her. He wants to be with her. But he can't do it. He
can't allow himself to do it. Yeah. I say, that scene, Mel Gibson, that the failed suicide.
So powerful.
That is like Oscar worthy.
It was intense.
That it's incredible. And he actually was given the part of Hamlet in the film Hamlet in 1990 based on his performance in that scene.
I'm not so
it's heart-wrenching. Like, yeah. And I know what's going to happen. I've seen this film a million times. But every time it gets me.
Yeah.
Every time. It's so good. And apparently he had a real blank bullet in the gun.
Okay.
Because he wanted the performance to be... I know it's only a blank, but still, if you fired it from that close range...
Oh, yeah, point blank, even not a blank, would probably kill you.
Yeah, and it really comes across how powerful and how much he looks like he's going to do it. And, like, little touches, like the way he's pointing it at his face, and then he decides to put it in his mouth to make sure it works.
It's getting more and more intense, but he just can't do it.
I honestly feel like the section of this film, from the beginning to up until the two partners meet, could be a different... part of a different film. I just think the vibe, the tone is completely
different
dark. To the second half. And at this point, I was like, what am I watching? I was like, we are 25 minutes into the film potentially, and we're getting to know the characters in depth, which does set the scene for the rest of the film, but it just felt different. It felt like a different genre.
I mean, when I watch it afterwards, I always think it comes across like they're very much two completely different people, and like they're almost. In bad places, in different ways. Like Riggs is very—he's suicidal, but he's not. He's lost his wife. He's distraught. And then there's Roger, who's like reaching the end of his career. His kids are growing up. He feels like he's losing touch with stuff.
It's coming to terms of own mortality in a way.
Yeah,
isn't it?
That's it. And sort of they almost do need each other, which is sort of why. And when they come together. They're a better team.
I think as well, you've got to remember that it wasn't the first, but it's one of the early buddy cop movies. So there have been lots since, and a lot of them purely focus on what you would say is like the second half of the film with the interaction between the two, and less about building up the two separately and really grounding them. So from that point of view, if you've seen like a buddy cop movie before, you're probably a bit like, this is weird, the start.
Yeah. But once they're introduced, I feel like that's where the film takes off for me. Like, that's where my interest peaks. But there's a lot of... It's quite topical, in hindsight, about the fact that they're talking about male mental health. And he's just... it's being dismissed. And then you've got the woman doctor in the police station. And she's like, no, I genuinely think he wants to kill himself. And he's like, well, if he wants... He'd do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's being dismissed.
Just trying to claim...
And that's still very relevant in... 2020, mental health is being considered a lot more.
There's quite a few bits in that scene that I found quite interesting. Like with, he's talking about being an 80s man and being in touch with his emotions. Mm. And you think, wow, an 80s man was a thing like that. Like, I don't know, it caught me off guard. I was just like, was an 80s man a thing? I always remember people saying that being a 90s man and stuff, and that being more in touch with your emotions. But yeah, and then he kind of dismisses it at the end anyway, because he says he was crying in his apartment because he was alone.
Yeah.
Like, it's all very, still very all macho,
it's
very
all machismo.
Very
superficial at the end, isn't it?
But I do like the way they meet, how he thinks he's going to pull a gun.
Superb.
But he then says, this was a question I had. So he tackles him because he's got a gun, and then he goes, oh yeah, I heard about your stunt yesterday. So they obviously know of each other, so why did he...
Perhaps doesn't know what he looks like, does he? So it's just a... sketchy guy in the police station who's playing with a gun, which you probably would... I mean, I don't imagine most of the people in the police station would do that, and they all very much in their suits and ties back like them, weren't they? Like, and he's there in an anorak.
I love the way when Roger first runs over to him, Riggs looks up and kind of, where is the gun?
He's ready to pop at any moment. He's on duty.
He's not talking about me.
Yeah.
And then you get, of course, the classic line, too old for this...
Is that... Oh, yeah, I've written that down. I'm too old for this S word. S-H-I-T.
Yeah, well, that's said quite a few times, isn't it? That's like the catchphrase.
I mean, that's his catchphrase literally throughout all the films.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'll have to watch.
And is another thing that's off... It's amazing the amount of stuff that from this film is referenced across media over and over again. Like, you'll often find in comedies and stuff... Again, I watch a lot of those. I'm too old for this stuff, and I'm too old for this, like... How I Met Your Mother used to have an old episode where they're saying it, I'm too old for this stuff. So it's, yeah, it's one of those tropes.
And they're counting to three. Do you go on three? Don't go three. It's not in this film, but they do kind of reference it when the choir's singing.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, so there's a false start with the choir when they first go to the police station.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but in the later movies, they can't decide. Do you go on three or do you go three and then go?
Yeah, but we do find out some little facts. What I did like about this film as well is that it's almost you're along for the ride with the mystery as well. Like, I think films these days, you tend to know who's done what right from the start.
Yeah.
But with this one, you don't. And you're learning facts of them as you go along. But they're almost secondary. So, like, obviously, the real story is about those two becoming buddies and a good team. But you find out things at that point, like that she was actually drugged. So if she hadn't jumped out, she would have been dead anyway. So it's no longer a suicide. It's actually, it would have been a murder.
Yeah.
And so it just keeps adding these little bits to it as it's going along. But then we finally meet the bad guys.
Well,
like, it's taken that long to meet the actual villain in the film.
You don't even, that was a weird scene with the lighter. I really didn't get it. I didn't get why. I didn't, oh, they're crazy. What? Why? Why is he just burnt?
Well, I think because the bloke comes in and he's very confrontational, like, and kicking off at them and trying to make this deal. And then they're like, look, well, I'm going to show you why you're not going to mess with us.
Yeah.
And burns his arm.
But nothing happens to his arm.
Well, no. I mean, it should be a lot more burnt than it actually is. But it's also setting him up as the foil for Riggs's character, isn't it? It's just like, Riggs is crazy. Oh, so's this guy. They're clearly going to have it out at the end.
I didn't clock that at this stage.
It's one of those often done things where it's just like, yeah, let's give the hero an antagonist of similar, well, craziness or whatever they are. But it's very short. Like, it's that and it's done. And that you don't see the villains again for ages.
No,
they're all just sort of talked about in the background because I mean, after that, it's
the girl's father.
Yeah,
the girl who jumped out of the father.
And then we find out that he called because she was into porn and he didn't want her involved in that sort of stuff.
Why?
And I don't know if that... I found this interesting. Like, in the 80s, doing porn was like, you're on a steady slope downhill. I don't think that'd be the same these days.
No,
I
people
think
make a career. It's a choice. Out of it,
I mean,
now, so
it's still frowned upon quite a lot by people, I know. But
in society,
it's not... Yeah. Like, these days, it's a way of... not a way of life.
Sex works is more more normalised.
It's a career path.
Plenty of people, you know, it's quite a common job now. That's changed quite a lot over the 30-odd years.
This guy just keeps saying to Murtagh, he keeps saying, you owe me.
You owe me.
What? Do we ever find out why? Because I don't think...
Yes, he does briefly tells Riggs that when they were in the war together, I don't know which war it's supposed to be.
No. Vietnam.
Vietnam. He saved his life. He took a bayonet in the chest for him.
Right.
Because I was waiting for it. I was like, I'm sure he does say.
I missed it.
But it's a very throwaway comment just as they're walking away. And then they go straight to that guy who's going to jump off the roof.
I love this.
So we get a bit more of the crazy. I suppose we have to. It's more to expose Myrtle to Riggs's craziness now.
Smoking throughout the film. They blimmin' love a cigarette and they love guns and they love booze.
Well, Riggs likes putting cigarettes in his mouth and then throwing them away. Having not lit them at all. He loves doing that.
But again, I don't want to keep talking about the films in the future, but it becomes a thing where he's trying to give up smoking and he starts eating dog biscuits and stuff. So a lot of these things do continue as themes, which is quite
nice.
Good.
So this whole jump bit.
Yeah.
Oh, we just completely missed the fact that they blow up a massive, crash mat.
Well,
you can't hear it.
I always
can't
think
see
that.
It. Oh my God.
Yeah, always have thought that. He would have noticed that crash mat had been put down there.
Yeah. Like, oh, come on. And we never find out why. Oh, he's at an office Christmas party and he just went up to the roof.
I would have liked to have known a bit more. Whether there's a reason that... It seems like someone's... Like he's had his heart broken maybe or something, but...
I think there's an extended version of the scene on like the Blu-ray.
Right.
That goes into a little bit. I can't remember off the top of my head. But like, because Riggs starts talking about his wife to him to try get on the same level as him, but he's not having any.
I expected him to talk about the fact he was going to kill himself the previous day, but he never picked it up. Mm. But yeah, you don't know. I was just like, oh, well, that's the film over. Great.
Yeah, I suppose that's why we don't see it blown up. So you think, oh my God, he's jumped. Like, as if that's actually going to be what's happened. But
again, this is Mel Gibson. I mean, think of him what you will, but as an actor, he is so good. Like when he grabs it, you want to jump? Let's do it! Let's do it! Let's do it. You just see it in his eye. And you're
the
like,
intensity.
He is crazy.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I like how annoyed with him Murtaugh is afterwards. Like when he's like, get over here, girl. Walks in a shop, slams a door, and it just flings open the other way. And he's just do you want to kid? Yeah. And that's when he's a bit like, oh, you really are crazy. He gives him the gun, doesn't he, to sort of say, go on then, just do it, just kill yourself.
Watching it again last night, I didn't understand what had happened there. So it looks like he pulls the trigger.
Well, he's starting to pull it, isn't it? Like, he stops him before he gets all the way.
Is that what it is?
Oh, that's how I was looking at it.
I thought it was like a blank or whatever.
Yeah, I wasn't sure whether it jammed or something.
He stops him.
Right.
You are crazy.
And then, let's go get some food.
Yeah.
And then they're like sat on the side of the road and he's on the phone, literally next to the other character, on the phone like, oh, so you really do think he wants to kill himself? And then he goes, walks over it, like, as if you wouldn't be able to hear.
Yeah, but I always look at it that he has heard him. Like, he's almost a bit like, everything okay? Like, he clearly knows what that phone call's been about. And he's just sort of, I always feel like Riggs is playing with Murtaugh. I mean, he is. He's because, like, right at the end, he says he's not actually crazy. But, like, he's constantly playing that angle.
Yeah. Okay, I think we're just going to take a quick break and then we'll be back. Welcome back. So, at this point, we go to that lovely house in the Hollywood Hills, that mansion with the lovely swimming pool and the two girls doing cocaine.
Who's the lead supposed to be, the guy in this bit?
Who's the what, sorry?
The lead, why are they there?
This was who was paying Amanda.
Oh, okay, so her employer.
Yeah, yeah.
Having seen the film, there's no reason he needs to die. Because he's actually
they start
not connected.
Him, don't they?
Yeah, but he's not connected in terms of the wider...
No, not really, but I think he obviously is doing dodgy dealing.
Yeah.
And he would have been a lead, so they'd want to question him.
Yeah, so I understand why they went there, because they think he's connected to the porn, don't they? They don't know at this point it's the wider drug thing, but... Yeah, more boobs, more girls doing cocaine with boobs. Yeah.
But it's that whole thing about, like, he's always killing people.
Yeah, well, that's this point, isn't it?
But Riggs is quite well-behaved during this sequence.
Until... But it starts all getting shooting.
It's necessary for him shooting. Can I add that when that bloke falls in the swimming pool cover and gets caught up into it, I hate that bit. It gives me a heart attack every time. I like the idea of being caught up in that swimming pool cover. No matter how many times I watch it, it's always uncomfortable.
That's whatever stuntman did that. Hats off.
Because I can't even imagine trying to get out of that.
They must be so ready. Well, I don't know whether they have the mat on a rope or something so they can pull it out quickly so it's caught up. You know, you have to wonder how they do it. It's all very safe, obviously, but horrible.
I thought it was like a plastic cover because of construction work. It didn't really look like a pool cover to me. And that I literally wrote, why is there plastic on the pool? Now it's a pool cover, it kind of makes more sense.
Yeah.
So, but Riggs saves Murtaugh's life there.
Yes.
In that moment. And then I think it's my interpretation that Roger then feels he's obliged to ask.
He's starting to soften up to Riggs a bit more, isn't he? Yeah.
Probably appreciative that he did. Literally just save his life.
Yeah, definitely. So they end up going... Well, it brings him round for dinner, doesn't he?
Murtaugh puts his hand into the oven, which is on, to see what it's for dinner.
I love that his wife calls him out for being... for showing off.
Yeah,
in front
that's
of his
great,
new friend.
What did she say?
You're being an arsehole.
I always thought his family are very well written. They're, I mean, like, as an on-screen family, they just... they feel real.
Yeah.
Like, they are all just, there's a bit of family banter.
Very believable.
And it's a nice scene. It's where, and it obviously shows Riggs what a real family life's like, and he likes the family, doesn't he? It brings them, it's starting to bring them more and more close together.
Mm.
Which, when really, I mean, it's funny in a way, because they've only been partners for what?
24 hours.
A day, we think, maybe?
Yeah.
2 days?
Yeah.
But they're already starting to gel. The whole thing with, he's there with his daughter as well, who's clearly got a crush on him. Just staring at him across the table. And I'm always a bit like, Riggs obviously knows this and plays into it.
Yeah.
And he's been a bit coy as well. And it's just quite funny because it's like, I assume he's not actually interested in her.
No.
But it looks like he's playing right into it.
Because he knows it'll annoy Roger.
When they're actually having dinner, did anyone else... I couldn't listen to a conversation. It was way too muttery. Like, there was a lot of muttery conversations going on, and I just... I really didn't like it. I get it's a family dinner, but for a film, I couldn't listen to the conversation.
I think that's what I liked, though, because it was very much an everyone talking over each other, family meal, like, they're all messing about, the kids start rapping, and Roger tries to join in, but his raps are rubbish.
Creases me up every time because it's off screen as well, so you don't even get to see it.
My name is Roger, and I'm a Roger. Like, what? And he's just like, instead of beatbox, he's just basically spitting into his hand. I think that's very funny, but I see where you're coming from there. It's if you're trying to follow what's being said,
you can't,
but no. I don't think none of it's really that relevant, is it? It's just banter. It's not until they go outside and they're on the speedboat.
Random.
And they start talking about the case again. And that's, I like these bits, you see. I like that every now and then they start talking and they start batting ideas off each other. Like, oh, maybe it's this, maybe it's this. And you keep getting pulled back into the case.
Yeah.
I found that quite good. The way
they're
it's
both
done.
Looking for an excuse to talk about it.
Yeah, and I suppose so, almost. Yeah.
I like how it's left where he's like, do you like my wife's cooking? It's like that. And he's like, no, it's awful.
He knows,
and that's like the honest
him.
Bit. Like, yeah, that's developing.
That is a good. It's the trust forming thing, isn't it? Which is fantastic, really. But
yeah, but then when he wakes up and the and Riggs has got his coffee right under his nose, I thought it was his wife. Like, I
think you're
no
supposed
idea.
To, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's great.
Can you imagine, take this up to Roger? Just, can you imagine being woken up by that, though? The smell of coffee and someone just talking at you about the case with your fresh, newborn eyes to the day. Horrible.
If it was Mel Gibson, I'd be right with it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, back Mel Gibson back in the day. Maybe not so much now.
And little moments like when Riggs starts drinking the coffee and he takes it back off him. I love
it. Oh, yeah, yeah. and it's obviously because of the conversation last night. They then decide they're going to go to Roxy's house, don't they? Because they think the hooker right at the start.
Well, they're brainstorming,
Dixie.
Aren't they?
Yeah.
They go to the shooting range.
This whole, like, it's... Well, what is it they say? It's
thin.
It's thin, isn't it? Thin. Razor thin, which keeps coming back up. It's like...
In the shooting range.
Huh?
Really? A smiley face.
That's how good he is.
But the smiley...
But he's not that good when people are moving. Which is later a theme throughout the film.
I do think now and again,
shot,
like
he misses so much.
He does miss quite a few shots that he perhaps should.
With his handgun, I would say.
But that's
when he's got the sniper rifle.
Yeah,
but that's in a controlled environment.
I know, but I did think there was a few where he's like shoots like 15 times at a car and doesn't even break a wheel.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm like, come on, he's meant to be this pro.
When he's shooting that helicopter later, I feel like he could nail one shot in that engine.
Yeah.
I imagine, though, I mean, a handgun on a moving target. I mean, I don't know how accurate that would be anyway. I mean, you've got to assume a lot of other factors in there. Whereas a sniper rifle is much more accurate. Mm. It's much more powerful.
I like the show-off bit where he like puts it all the way
to
the back.
That is such a lovely sequence with him singing to himself.
Oh, yeah.
And then
how he
looks back as well.
How he moves across as well in the base. You don't see it until it comes right across. It's very well done. But it's obviously back then, that have a nice day smiling was very fresh for people, wasn't it? You probably don't know that so much. But
have a nice day.
I don't even know where it comes from, but it was a smile. It was always just a yellow background smiley face and have a nice day.
Aye.
So that's why he says have a nice day. Because I don't really think up until that point we actually know he's that much of a marksman to be.
No.
Where it all sort of starts to come out. And then they go...
To Dixie's.
That's right. Then they go to Dixie's, don't they? And
the house explodes.
The house blows up. Well, I couldn't understand why. That kid was wearing 3D glasses.
Oh, I love it. Why?
But why?
Why? They couldn't afford sunglasses, so...
Is that what it was?
I don't know. None of them are wearing glasses.
He's just wearing 3D glasses the whole time.
Just classic 80s kind of like, this is my character.
And I mean, they couldn't have just killed Dixie with the... They couldn't have just gone in and shot her. They had to blow up her entire house.
It's supposed to be
the guns and explosions thing that's just overdone.
But it's supposed to be that it's supposed to be a gas explosion. Like, it's supposed to be an accident. It wasn't really supposed to be... weren't supposed to have found out. It's only that they found out the trigger. And this is where we know that Riggs has obviously been in special forces, that he knows it's a CIA trigger or something. Mm. But he's talking about it, like, he's got a mercury switch and all that. But because the guy setting it was pretending to be reading the gas meter, I always assume it's just supposed to be an accident. Like, oh, it's, she just got caught in a gas explosion.
Yeah.
So that's why. I know, yeah, like I say, but it's a great explosion. I like actually blew up a house.
Yeah, and it's time with that plane flying back in the background as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic.
Guns.
Well, he's always kind of like he's trying to get his coat off. His coat's on fire, and it's like, is it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that is nice that he goes to that help.
Made
him.
Me laugh.
They start putting together, though, don't they? At this point, that it's not to do with the porn.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because this is where their whole hunch, like, it's razor thin. Suddenly, like, clearly wasn't hunch. Clearly, they're actually onto something. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And they go to question the dad again.
Yeah, and when I was watching it back, I was like, well, they made a bit of a leap here. Like, have I missed a scene where they've decided to go and do this? But actually, you kind of work it out as you go along that actually Roger's right. He did phone him before his daughter died.
Yes.
And it sounded like he was going to reveal all to him, and then he's been frightened off now because he's got another daughter.
Hmm. It's good detective work at the end of the day. I assume that's how detectives work. You know, take these facts that are a bit tenuous and sort of make links to make them work.
Mm.
Yes.
This scene, come on.
Which one? Where are we now?
So they're at the funeral and he's talking about, he says, oh, well, we're selling heroin. We have two shipments that come in a year. He starts divulging this information and Myrtle's like, you're going to tell me everything. You're going to tell me this. And then suddenly, helicopter up the side of the cliff. It's not, oh my, come on. Suddenly, helicopter's gone away. Like, it's just too much. Like, it's just too much. Do you know what I mean? I know in my head, obviously, this is with where I've grown up. But if a helicopter is in flight, you can find out where it's been.
Well, you can now.
Could you just hire a helicopter, fly up the side of a cliff and no one would know?
That was their own helicopter.
But you can't just fly a helicopter.
Not now.
Could you back then?
Yeah, probably.
Probably. I do wonder, like, even if you were in that room having that discussion, a helicopter comes up by the cliff. You'd probably turn around and go, what the hell?
You would have heard it before it got there.
You wouldn't be like, I'll continue with my eggnog.
Oh, I love the fact that you can eggnog. The little Christmas touches are so nice. I do have to say, I do like the Christmas touches.
But I mean, it's a plot device, as I say, isn't it? I mean, they've got to kill him right before he's going to actually give him anything useful.
From here, jumps massively.
Yeah, we're getting into the end of the film.
Yes.
But it's the end of the film, but it should be the middle. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I would say.
It does annoy me, though, like we're saying at this point, you've just found out that he is an expert marksman. He's really good at shooting, but he shoots all those shots at the helicopter and doesn't even wing it. I want him to like make it, at least catch it and it be smoking as they fly away.
We've got to come in and land because...
Yeah. But he shoots at them and they leave. And it's a bit like, come on. He's supposed to be able to shoot everything from anywhere. And I feel like that's a tiny wasted opportunity. It does start to kick into high gear now. Well, because is it so? And then immediately after this, that's right. He's on the phone to him, isn't he? And he says, we've got a new problem now. These two cops know about it. And then immediately, they're still going after. They're trying to talk to hookers about Roxy, aren't they? And he just gets blown away with a shotgun shot. Just launches him out into a shop window, but thankfully he's wearing a bulletproof
vest. Classic 80s stunt. Let's do this super slow-mo as the glass breaks. Boom. Love it. Love it.
Yeah. They allude to the fact, this is when Murtaugh's daughter gets kidnapped, and they allude to the fact that she was dating Mr. Joshua. Because he says, what, blonde hair and...
No. You've got two things muddled up. But yeah, earlier on in the film, speaks about her boyfriend.
Yeah, having...
And then they say a body's turned up near his house.
Oh, so I didn't...
And describes it the same way he describes it. And that's why they rush back and he's like, oh my God, they know where I live. So that's how they end up. That's why they rush back to his house.
I thought she was seeing Mr. Joshua and then he kidnaps her.
That would be twisted.
Well, I thought he's way too old for her. That was my question.
Okay. I see where you made that connection because of the blonde hair thing. Definitely. But no.
And she's been kidnapped with no one knowing. No,
well, she was on a date, I think.
And the mum's like, what's happened? And then she cries on the stairs, but then suddenly disappears for the rest of the kidnapping.
Well, they leave, don't they?
No, because they wait for the second phone call. but they're waiting in the kitchen and they're making a plan. They're talking like, do you trust me? Because this is where the intensity is like, it rams up, doesn't it? Because it's personal. But the mum's just not there. And that's something I found a bit weird.
She's keeping the kids upstairs.
Side tangent, but there are deleted scenes where she's upstairs crying in the bedroom over it.
That makes more sense. But
I suppose that takes away from the pace a little bit.
I think it slows down too much if you show that.
So yeah, they play the dead angle up, don't they, then? I like that they go and meet in salt flats in the middle of nowhere, but like they've still got a helicopter and like massive cars.
Stretch limo.
Someone's going to see that?
But the two were organised enough, this is a fact, but the two were organised enough to tell the police that he'd been shot and to say he was dead. But they're not organised enough to tell the police they're going to get the daughter back and they need backup.
Well, I think the idea was that they would be able to do it themselves. Like, he was going to be able to snipe them and they would do it without drawing attention to it.
But would you not tell
They probably wouldn't have got sign-off to kill and murder these people as well.
But they kill and murder people the whole way through. Thought that was just
But it's all self-defence kind of thing.
Yeah. Where, his daughter.
But Martin shooting from miles out sniper rifle is not self-defence.
No, that's why they did. But it did make me laugh. It's just like, let's set it up in a situation where he obviously has to get the sniper rifle out.
And how do they meet? How do they know where to meet? It's the middle of nowhere.
Do they not say on the phone?
They say like a location, but it was in the middle of nowhere.
They probably went to the middle and decided that was it.
I must admit, I didn't think. I was more bemused by the fact that open location where he could easily snipe and use his skills.
But decided to position himself behind Murtagh. So Murtagh is in the way for one of the shots.
Oh, yeah.
I suppose he needs to see the faces of people so he doesn't shoot
the
daughter. And then, because it does kind of work, doesn't it? And they start shooting him, and then he tells her to get in the car and drive.
Oh, when she's screaming outside the car for like 3 minutes.
Why did you get in the limo? Why didn't you get in his car? And then her escape is so rubbish.
It's so upsetting.
Yeah, like,
so upsetting.
It's a huge, flat piece of land, so she just drives in a straight line with a helicopter trying to, like, if I was in a car and a helicopter was trying to get at me, I wouldn't think I'd feel that bothered by it. What's it going to do?
When it's riding on alongside, all you got to do is brake and the helicopter will carry on.
Turn. Then she hits some slightly rough ground and it's like, no, I'm getting out of the car now.
Gets out and instantly falls over. It's so upsetting.
So upsetting.
Very upsetting. But obviously, they're all captured. Done for a reason, isn't it? Huh?
They're all captured. The torture bit with Riggs is strapped up, isn't he? With his arms around and they're electrocuting him. God.
What?
Why?
Just good, though.
Any scene to get him shirtless, I feel like. Why would you? So they know he's got no information. They know it. So they decide to electrocute him. So he's in a lot of pain. But with the other, Murtagh, they decide to punch him. Surely you'd electrocute the one and cause the one with more pain who you know knows information.
I think it's because they know Riggs would be able to withstand more because he's special forces. It needs to be like harsh torture.
And all they've really got to do with Roger is show him his daughter.
Yeah.
And he'll crumble. But I don't think they do know that they don't know anything, do they?
No.
And they are trying to get information out of
it. And they don't actually have any.
No.
But they don't know that, so.
When Riggs breaks that guy's neck, it is brutal every time
you watch
that.
Brutal.
Bit where he gets himself out of that as well. I think it's fantastic.
It is good.
Really shows how good he is.
Mm.
It makes me laugh how, again, like his daughter, Roger's daughter, is just comes in and constantly just starts hugging him and hanging off. And then he pulls him off the chair. It's like, are you going to strangle him in with the ropes around your arm? Just calm down.
They get out of this. The next bit happens they get out of the situation pretty quick, don't they? And all of the bad guys just run. I know they're being shot at, but they do just, okay, bye, run. And then it goes from being in there and in this situation to the street really quickly.
This is where he chases him down on foot, chases a car down on foot. Yeah. Oh, it was always a bit too much.
He is pretty quick. His legs are going.
He's running.
Hell of a pace.
The other guy's still in a car.
But he could cross over at a certain place.
But all it is he says, cut him off on the bridge. But like, he's going down the slip road while Riggs is shooting at him. He really hasn't got that far ahead of him.
But he gets him. He gets him.
He does get him.
They look insane. But they just go... When they torture him, they don't take either of their badges off of them. I mean, they're probably checking for weapon. Oh, your police badge? Keep it.
That's so true.
And then suddenly when the police come, oh, I'm a member of the police, and the police are like, oh, okay, good luck.
Crack on.
And they're like, take the daughter. So he takes the daughter and calls for backup, but the backup never really arrives. Not that they helped anyway.
No.
Not until later, yeah.
But it moves around so much, though. Where does the backup come from? Like, where do they go?
What happens to Captain Ed? This is the scene where Captain Ed, who's the main bad, big bad, dies.
Oh, the general?
Yeah.
Does he... the captain. When you said the captain, I thought you meant the captain of the
No,
station.
Captain Ed. He dies, doesn't he?
Oh, right. So he's in the other car. So this is a callback then to the firing range scene, isn't it? Where Murtaugh puts out that single shot. He does his whole neck roll and just does a straight shot.
Yeah.
So he shoots the driver of the car the general's in. The car flips.
Crashes,
and then the fire sets off all the grenades that are they've been putting in the car. So that's how he dies. It's a bit of an anticlimactic death in some ways. But you know at this point that the real finisher is going to be between Riggs and...
Mr. Joshua.
That's it. So... Oh, yeah, that's right. So the general dies because he loses Joshua, doesn't he? And he comes back and then they realise he knows where they live. So they've
got to go to
his house. The backup
is there at that point.
Unnecessary, may I just say, that Mr. Joshua escapes. Come on, just wrap the next... This should have ended here. The next scene, why?
What, with the fight on the...
With the fight on the front lawn. And smashing the car through the front of the hat. Why?
I always think of smashing... I must admit, when it's just like, let's put a car through the front of a house. Like, would you really be like, I'm going to wreck my house?
And they've left a note. The family's not there. They've left a note. I like the fact the family do have security, because I thought, okay, that's thought through.
Yeah.
But, okay, that's thought through quickly, but they couldn't tell them the daughter had been kidnapped.
Oh, well, I assume they've obviously got back there way before Joshua has.
Yeah.
Like, whether that highway he's got on is going completely the wrong direction, they've managed to get home and get it all set up. But it still is a bit like, I'm going to put a car through my house.
But then, the long physical fight. Oh my God, I've never been more... What? Come on, I'm bored. I'm so bored.
I know they had to have, like, right, we need to... Everything stripped back, these two against each other.
Yeah, mano a mano.
We want to see Riggs... Joshua, you know, at
we're not
it.
Watching WWE, but, though, are we?
But I do think it's a little contrived how they get there in a kind of, we've got him, and then Murtaugh's turning like, I'm the operating officer, I'm in charge, I take full responsibility of what's happened, just let it. But then he is like, he killed two cops.
He did shoot two cops. So yeah. It's just like, we're gonna beat the hell out of him.
They beat the hell out of him. That goes on. Oh, he's on top. No, he's on top. Oh, he's winning. Yeah, okay. That's... Come on. How many times can we do that?
I like a good fight scene. I'm not going to lie.
It was too long.
It perhaps does go on a minute or two more than it should, but I do enjoy the scene.
They've got him, and you think, perfect. They've got someone who can expose the whole operation. Because it's not three people involved, after we've seen there's multiple henchmen.
Right.
But no. You think, oh, they're going to keep him alive for question? No.
No.
Double shot.
Can't keep the baddie alive.
He can't continue to live.
But that's a great shot when they both pull a gun and shoot him at the same time.
He's the one person with information to get expose the whole operation.
Well, but I mean, the operation really is just the general and Mr. Joshua's is. I mean, the henchmen are just henchmen.
But there's so many people, like, that's going to just...
They were mercenary.
They
were just being paid.
Yeah, they were just paid.
Of the next one? Is the next one not continuing to expose this operation?
No.
But, I mean, I suppose it's one of the things is that they know the main people who are involved in it now. They'll be able to trace what they've been doing and...
Yeah.
Police work afterwards is boring. You don't really care about that, do you? He always used to kill the bad guy back in the day. Arresting them for questioning is anticlimactic, though, isn't it? It's like they've arrested him, taken away. Ugh. You want him dead.
I like the end.
Yeah, I mean, it finishes nice. And so he goes around for Christmas dinner. And I always think that's a great finisher, that they are friends now.
The daughter's surprisingly fine, though, the next day.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it is Christmas.
Well, we don't know if it's the next day, do we?
Doesn't he say it's Christmas, for goodness sake?
Oh, when he shoots the TV. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Or there's something to allude that it's Christmas Eve that it all kicks off.
Oh, really? I must admit, I've never noticed that. I suppose...
She's so happy.
You know, you don't want to sit there being traumatised.
Okay, yeah, but you don't... Okay, I've been kidnapped. I've gone through all of this. Someone knocks on the door on Christmas Eve night. I don't run to the front door to open it.
We'll send the door who's just been kidnapped open the door. Yeah, I see what you mean.
That's a good, yeah, that's fair enough. I suppose they knew he was coming round, maybe.
They didn't, because he's
no, they didn't know he was coming round.
He gives the bullet that he was going to shoot himself with, which I thought was nice, like a nice gesture.
I think the trouble is they need to have the moment with those two.
Yes.
And that's the way you have that.
Maybe she saw him out of her bedroom window.
Maybe.
There you go, you see, I've solved the mystery. But it's nice because he's at peace, because there's a quick scene at the graveyard before as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
Where he's at his wife's gravestone, and he seems very... It's like he's found...
He's a member of this family from this point onwards.
And that's nice, and it's nice how he invites him in. He's not going to stay for dinner, but he is really.
Including the dog. I love the fact that...
I like the fact the dog came in at the end. Love it.
It's nice. I think it's a great way to finish the film.
Yeah.
And with that now, let's take a look back and... You know, let's see how this looks in the cold light of day in 2020.
Ooh.
What are your thoughts, Mark?
Well, I personally, I mean, I feel like it may be one of them ones that's hard in some ways to assess because I've watched it so many times over the years that I've perhaps grown accustomed to it. But I still find it as entertaining now as I would have done when I first watched it 15 years ago, maybe. While you're watching it, there are a couple of unfortunate slurs that were very prevalent back in the 80s. But on the whole, I don't think I'd find it in any way like offensive or anything. Like personally, I think it works well. I think it holds up well. It's a product of its time. Again, they always will be. We'll say this probably every episode. And a lot of things, like when he's got this massive cell phone out and you can't help but look at it and go, wow, look at that. But watching it as a film... set in the 80s, recorded in the 80s, I think it's quite entertaining.
Yeah, I think I agree with your assessment. I think it is much like you. I've seen it so many times that I, you know, brush over a lot of maybe the flaws that Taylor quite rightfully has brought up, and I'm kind of looking at now going, okay. And I mean, there are parts, and I think especially this year, stuff like the kid Alfred, what he was saying by the fire truck, and the kids talking about... They say the cops shoot the black people, and it's, you know, it's hard to digest, kind of think, oh, wow, absolutely. This is from the 80s. But in terms of storytelling and filmmaking and character-wise, and I think that's really where it does still hold up. The characters
definitely.
And performances are fantastic. I mean, Danny Glover is superb in this film. I really enjoy his performance. And then again, Mel Gibson... They make such a good partnership. I personally...
You understand why there were three more films after this.
Absolutely.
And there's always talk of, will they do one more? Yeah. And part of me would love it.
So, I mean, Danny Glover's got to be pushing mid-70s now. But, yeah, why not?
He's definitely too old for this stuff at this point.
Why not? But... Taylor, come on.
I don't think it holds up.
No?
No. At all. Today you just wouldn't get a film with the, like I've said it loads of times, but the explosions, the boobs, the guns, the whole, I don't think it holds up. I don't think it's...
But I mean, you definitely do get films with explosions and guns.
Yeah, but name a film that's like it.
You're going to put me on a spot like that. But what, from when?
From the last...
Well, I mean, you've got those, what are the Gerard Butler films, Olympus Has Fallen?
Yeah,
things like
all
that.
Those Fallen films.
They're
well gun heavy. The whole White House blows up.
But are they not on the basis of the world's ending?
No, just the White House. Or what was London?
I just don't... I'm not a fan of...
You're not... I mean, on the whole, do you watch action films?
Yeah, to a certain extent, I will watch an action film. I'm not an action film fan, don't get me wrong. I just think there's so many things in it, like the dismissal of men's mental health and things like that that just don't...
But I think... On the flip side of that, I think the fact that they do bring that up does make it quite relevant.
Yeah.
And the fact that it gets dismissed.
My vision is blurred, probably. Like, I overall did enjoy watching the film, but I didn't like it on the whole.
Mm.
The first half an hour for me was just not the sort of film I would watch, and I didn't enjoy it.
I can appreciate if... I mean, there's genres of films, obviously, and that... Action is a genre of film, but I also feel like 80s action is a different genre.
Yeah.
And they don't make 80s action films anymore.
No.
And apart
Which
from,
for me is a shame.
Apart from maybe Expendables, would you put that in that bracket?
Yeah, that was... Because that was supposed to be a throwback to those sorts of films where it's just big macho men going in and just creating havoc. and action films these days, I mean, action heroes these days are different, I think, as well. You do, like you say, you do sort of get them with like those Fallen films, as it were, and some other stuff. But
I can totally appreciate Taylor's point of view on this, though, that I think coming into this, if you hadn't heard me and Mark going on about this, this would never appeal to you, would it?
No. A lot of people, though, when talking about the podcast, I'm like, oh, we're watching this. They're like, oh, that's a great film. Men and women. Like, because in previous episode, it was suggested The Matrix. When I talked about this with other women, they were like, oh, no, it's a boy film. Whereas this is, I would say this is a bit more of a, like, stereotypical boy film. But it appealed to everyone.
My wife enjoys it. She likes Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting that it's more, it appeals to a wider audience, but still not my cup of tea.
This does have that comedy, like where The Matrix doesn't really have comedy. This has a comedy layer to it. It's dark comedy, don't get me wrong. And I feel like that comedy lightens up as the series goes on. It's as much about those two bouncing off each other as it is anything else, which I think makes it more appealing to everyone.
Interestingly enough, my partner, who's also 21, has just literally said, in hindsight, the film aged poorly. And I think it's interesting that he has the same perspective as me, being the same age. But that's across, maybe that is just a generational thing, as
I think you could be said, onto something there, sure. Yeah.
So, in summary, it has and hasn't aged.
We disagree. Agree to disagree.
We'll agree to disagree.
I think depending on your history with it and what you've grown up with in terms of films.
I feel part of it, and I don't, like we were talking about our introductions to Lethal Weapon, I get a bit of a nostalgia for late night movie on the TV that I put on watching, which you know, you don't have with that film at all. So for me, I'm kind of like, it's like that cozy comfort food.
Yeah, I think as well, like if I perhaps had someone a similar age maybe to me who perhaps hadn't seen Lethal Weapon but had grown up with those films, maybe they would be more comfortable watching it because they'd know what to expect.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to hear what our audience think.
Yes,
for sure. Like, I'll put a poll on the social medias to see, do you think the film holds up well today? Because I'd be interested to see.
Like it.
Comments, you know, please
do get in touch. Send us an email if you like about that at thatshindsight@gmail.com. So that's Lethal Weapon. Let's talk about next time when we meet up. We're doing Mark's year of birth, which is
1980.
Ooh.
Right on the fringes of our selection of years. So I've actually chosen Airplane, which is a favourite of mine. It's going to be an interesting one to talk about because I already in the top of my head know that there's some questionable moments in that film and not a lot of a plot.
I haven't. My history is no, haven't seen it. Confused why it's called Airplane rather than Aeroplane.
But it's a good question. It's a valid question.
It's a question I've never even considered until this moment. So please watch Airplane.
Yes, you have homework. Watch Airplane, not Aeroplane. I don't know if there is a film called Aeroplane, but Airplane. Watch it. Okay, that's it for this episode. Remember, you can subscribe to us on your preferred podcast platform so you can get every episode as it's released. And if you like the show enough to give us some love, we'd be over the moon if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, as this helps us to get exposure through algorithms and things like that.
Wow.
Remember, you can get in touch over email at thatshindsight@gmail.com, and you can follow us on the social medias, Facebook and Twitter at thatshindsight, Instagram at thatshindsightpod. So, it's goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from me.
And I'll also say goodbye.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.